Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
With a smile on your lips, you feel a little bit
tired. Hey everybody, welcome in. It's the Charlotte Soccer Show. It is a victory Monday on Charlotte Soccer Show. Danny Brams is here. Danny Brackett is here as well.
Double dose of DBs. You're all right? I mean, can you handle this?
Yeah, the two Dannys is maybe my new favorite podcast. I mean, two Robbies, they do a decent job, but the two Dannys definitely have done a phenomenal job lately on Charlotte Soccer Show. Don't leave them hanging.
Oh, my fault. Will you be our agent?
I don't have a client yet, but I'm close to maybe having one.
Right.
So maybe I need you guys. Yes, I will be
here. Yes, exactly.
But Danny, it's good to see you. It's a great show because we're discussing a win over Atlanta United.
Yeah, baby.
Derby win on the road. How you feeling?
I'm feeling amazing. I'm feeling like we kind of unleashed ourselves. You know, Charlotte FC unleashed, if you will. I will admit, I'm going to come right out and say it off the bat, that when Atlanta went up 1-0, after we looked a little bit lifeless in the first 30, 40 minutes, I thought to myself, I mean, that could be game over. Can we even score? But I knew that Atlanta is not good. And so I knew that we were always going to have a chance. And it was kind of funny. You listen to Danny Higginbottom on the Apple MLS 360 crew. He was like, now Atlanta, they have a bad habit this year of conceding immediately after they score. And lo and behold, they did. Derek Williams, the center back, with the header goal, if you will, and all was good for us. And then second half, poured it on.
How are you feeling today, Brackett, about the win? And did you think that it was possible going down to Atlanta yesterday to get 3 points?
I didn't know what to expect. I really didn't. I went in the game with no expectations, and I just was really happy to see Leo Labata kind of have his moment, his first moment, big moment for Charlotte FC. Yes, he scored before, but two goals. A game-winning goal.
Yeah.
I mean, that's huge.
He only scores in 3-2 victories, Leal Abad.
That is a coincidence.
Yeah. Goals that really matter.
Yeah, exactly.
Yesterday,
yeah.
Atlanta pulls one back. Ooh. Late in that match.
Golazo.
Made things interesting.
Yeah.
At the end of that game, probably more interesting than Dean Smith wanted it to be. So
no
you
doubt.
Mentioned Leal Abad. I'm glad you did because I do want to start there for sure. And Brams, let's just talk about what Leal Abad means to this club. You're somebody that follows this team closer than anybody. And when he gets injected into this lineup, what does he do for the attack?
I mean, if you look at the first Abada goal, and I know you loved this, Johnny, it was front three combination play. But if you go all the way back, Abada picked that ball up in his own half mm-hmm. and took it upon himself to sprint past a couple guys with the ball at his feet, get himself into a position where he could kick it out to Patrick and then slide into some space. Patrick to Kerwin, Kerwin back to Abada, and then Abada just fires from outside the box, 20, 25 yards out, hits a worm burner, grounder. I mean, it's a similar goal that Leo Messi actually scored against Josh Cohen, the Atlanta goalkeeper, in the midweek when Atlanta somehow beat Miami in Miami. Absolutely amazing
wild
result.
Wild week for Atlanta.
Yeah, wild week. Beat Miami and lose to Charlotte. Beat Miami at Miami, lose to Charlotte at home. But
and then fire your manager.
Yeah, and he was on the hot seat going in. He was in big trouble even with the Miami win. But Abada, like, that left-footed strike, fast and hard on the ground where the keeper can't quite get to it. It was a beautiful thing.
I just don't think he believed that they gave him that much space on top of the box. And yeah. It was just an instinct just pulled the trigger right there.
Right. Fire.
And it feels like for majority of the season in front of the net, Charlotte FC has overthought in front of the net. And it felt like really once in our life that someone just shot the ball instinct-wise and it went in.
Well, and that was an instinct goal for sure, but you talk about taking it quickly. Now, his second goal was a one-touch finish. The first one wasn't.
Yeah.
Right, he had to collect himself and then fire one. The second goal was a really nice cutback pass from Brant Bronico right to the PK spot, and Leal Abada has a one-touch finish into that bottom right-hand corner, right? Same corner?
Same corner.
Let Bronny cook in the final third. I defy anyone who says Bronny's not the guy to play some offense. He just shows you many times that he's perfectly capable of. And for him to take the ball down to the end line and then cut it back into space was a beautiful, beautiful play for the second goal. You said, John, you called the first Abada goal the goal of the season. And then Brackets, when we were texting, you said the second goal might have been even better.
I thought so. I mean, that was for the first time I saw us not on the counter like the first goal was, but actually just break a team down in the final third. I mean, we connected like 15 to 20 passes and broke them down and
team
then
goal.
A nice little
Love
cut.
Team
yeah,
goal.
Team goal.
Yeah.
That just felt good to see because it seems like we always talk about lack of service. When it get to the final third, it gets bad. And that was like we just were picking passes. They didn't know what to do.
It was a great goal. And I'm fine to sit here and say that those are the two best goals of the season because this is probably the biggest win of the season, right?
Yeah, yeah. This is a win. Yes, I think so. I think so. I would probably put the Columbus win as the biggest win of the season. Columbus is a true contender, and Atlanta's at the bottom of the league, but I'm with you.
I would say that the NYCFC win in the first match.
Sure, yeah, and that looks better and better. They've won five, six in a row, I think, New York City. They're up at the top of the East. Yeah, that's a good call.
What was the other away win? We've had two.
Chicago,
kind of win. Yeah, I mean, like that's kind of a taken for granted. I think a derby win on the road, though, you know, with our fans taking over their stadium and all of that, was actually pretty nice. I can certainly see the case for this being the win of the season for sure.
In the post game, Dean Smith called it like a proper occasion, a proper football match.
Love that.
And it was that, right? And I think that's why I'll rank this the best win of the season because, you know, sometimes MLS can feel a little bit of a Mickey Mouse league. You know, you play in stadiums that are barely full with fans.
Right. Speaking of Chicago, yeah.
And on a day like this past Sunday, it's a day where you have over 2,000 away fans traveling. The only thing I would say is, I mean, come on. Why are you going to stick the traveling fans up in the highest part of the stadium?
They did us dirty, for sure.
I mean,
it was nosebleed city.
Brackett, he's the host of the Full-Time Roundup podcast. He does a great job covering European soccer. That doesn't happen in European soccer. Maybe it does at like Barcelona in Spain. But in the Premier League specifically, away supporters have front row seats.
Yeah, you can get almost any seat in the house that you want. Now, when I went to Sevilla, they actually had it like blocked off in plastic completely around, which is something that I'd never seen before.
Yeah, they do take precautions.
They do take a lot of precautions overseas.
There have been incidents over there in Europe before,
but
for sure.
That was pretty. I mean, I feel like that always happens when you go to Atlanta. All of our fans just get the worst seats in the house.
Well, it's an MLS thing.
Okay.
Right? It's like MLS is not. And the reason why I mentioned the Full-Time Roundup podcast and European soccer is just because the way it works typically in England, anyway, is that you get a corner of the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
The away section is typically full, right. But in MLS, fans don't travel. It's a bigger country. We don't need to get into this. That's one thing that honestly pisses me off, the idea that, oh, when you play for MLS, you have to travel so much. You have to, the derby, 4 hours away. Is that really a derby?
279 hitting? Miles,
right.
Yeah.
This is our culture, okay?
Right, exactly.
So deal with it. Like,
right.
That's the way MLS works. And it is a derby against Atlanta, and I thought that it's absolute bullshit that the supporters have to sit up in the nosebleeds.
Yeah, and they represented. They made the most of the situation for sure. Another thing, there's another thing that MLS doesn't have that Europe has that I want to bring up in a second. But just before we go any further, guys, and I know Johnny, you just finished your beer, but we failed to mention the setting. We're at the wonderful Salud Cerveceria,
yes,
having a good old time. I'm drinking a Money Trees IPA. What do you got, Danny?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot. It's number 6. I can't see it from
like
here.
Oh, it's like something with Playa.
Yeah, it's like De La Playa, I think it is.
Yeah.
It's a Kolsch.
Kolsch. Ooh, it's a heavy Kolsch.
Yeah, it's good.
Love a heavy Kolsch.
It's a Kolsch. I had a Mexican lager, the Del Patio, the classic Ooh. Del Patio here.
Love that.
At Salud. I finished my beer. I'm not going to cheers you because my glass is empty.
Right, you don't cheers an empty glass for sure, but I did want to get that in. Now,
maybe I'll get up mid-segment.
Right, and we'll just carry it. Yeah. That's
I got the two Dannys.
That's the beauty of the three-man weave. Exactly, you know, exactly.
I love having the two Dannys on the show just because I can tee him up and watch him go.
What I want are your thoughts. If you're going to do that, just while you're getting over there getting your beer, think about this. The thing I mentioned that MLS does not have is goal line technology. Because the first goal, the first Charlotte goal, which was the own goal off of Derek Williams' jock, was questionable. It wasn't called the goal on the pitch, and the assistant referee seemed to have, you know, not had a good view of it, I guess, because it seemed pretty obvious that when Josh Cohen made that diving save that his hand was very far behind the line when he touched it. Goal line technology would have made that whole thing much easier, though.
You look at the ref, he's waiting for the right. buzz, and then you know. And I mean,
it took the buzz a while to come.
La Liga doesn't have it either, so, I mean, it's ridiculous at this point.
Every
league
should.
It's,
yeah. How much does it cost?
It's expensive.
You guys might consider this an egregious take, and I'm sure a lot of people that are watching this show are going to be upset about this as well, but I didn't see an angle that proved to me that the ball crossed the line.
I didn't either. I was happy, though, either
I mean,
way.
Yeah, I'm going to take it. Don't get me wrong. But show me an angle that proves that the ball crossed the line. You can.
No, but it looked more over than a not over. That's what I'm going to say. It looked more over than not over. As soon as VAR calls him over, you know that VAR thinks the referee crew on the pitch has made a clear and obvious error, and they want him to take another look at it. The inside the goal angle doesn't help you much, but the wide angle that they showed, and I mean, Columbus fans are probably going to be pretty triggered because remember they had the offside called from the crazy angle that was like the high angle, whatever. So Charlotte has benefited from some VAR calls on some dicey angles, but it felt in the moment for sure that it was a goal. Just like in live speed, I mean, the ball looked well over the line. I know Cohen made a monster dive to get over there and get a big paw on it, but like his hand was way behind the line when it happened. I think if you look at the shadows, it was all right.
Of course, right? And don't take this the wrong way. I'm obviously glad that Charlotte got the goal, and it seemed like common sense to give the goal.
Yeah.
But was there like clear and obvious evidence that the ball crossed the line? I don't think that you could actually prepare evidence to prove it. It just was a field call. It was. There was no.
But it was a field call, but it felt like it was in.
But it felt right.
Yeah.
So everybody, and it seemed like Atlanta was furious about it. I haven't seen a lot of people today.
Right. I think Cohen knew that it was over for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, he knew.
So while I go and get a beer, I'm going to ask you guys this question to debate amongst yourselves. Without that own goal, does Charlotte FC ever get into the game?
What do you think, Danny?
I don't know. I mean, that was a huge equalizer right before halftime.
Yeah.
We're still in the game. Dino can say, let's open it up a bit.
Right.
Danny Higginbotham constantly in the second half was saying, at halftime, Dino was rallying the troops. He was trying to get them to really go for it. And I feel like if you're down 1-0, scrap the game plan, and you're going to have to start with something fresh.
Yeah, and I do think they changed the game plan a little bit. Atlanta changed their own game plan a little
more.
They did. I feel like it's important. It's really important after that first half that we played to go in at 1-1. It's way better to go in at 1-1 than down 1-0 there because it's honors even at that point with 45 to play, and you go in 1-0 and you start questioning some things and you're like, can we hang? You know, and it allows Atlanta to come out with a defensive mindset in the second half, whereas at 1-1, they have to come out and continue to play straight up. And eventually, once Abada scored, Atlanta got really, really
stretched.
Changed. They switched from a back three to a back four. And like, because finally, Charlotte was able to put pressure on. And I like the fact that they pushed for it and went for the third goal. They didn't stop, you know, attacking. Like, Dean Smith didn't turtle up with the 2-1 lead on the road. That was good. And, yeah, to answer your question, Johnny, what did you get another plot?
Del Patio.
Little Del Patio. You got to love it here at Salud.
Mexican lager is quickly becoming my favorite lager.
It's exactly. It's a good one. They know how to do it down there. I would just say that I don't know. Again, when it was 1-0, I was like, shoot, it might be game over. And without that quick equalizer to sort of reset things, if you allow Atlanta to trench up and turtle like that, I think it would have been a much different second half and potentially a problem for sure.
And you got to have breaks that fall your way in a soccer match, especially on the road, especially in a derby.
Right.
Just an egregious error from Derek Williams, let's just be honest. I mean,
it was a really nice corner from Yere. Yere put that ball right where it needed to be. There, unfortunately, there was no Charlotte person on the end of it, but it was confounding enough for the Atlanta defense that Williams had it ate him up. It ate him alive. As like a second baseman or a shortstop, they say that ball just ate him up. That's kind of what happened with that corner kick.
Okay, so when you in golf, when you're wagering on golf, and there's someone who is way ahead in the lead, you can wager on the winner minus the person who's way ahead.
Sure.
Right? So if somebody's minus 10 and in second place is someone who's minus 3, the way that the sports books make things competitive is they take the minus 10 off the board and whoever wins
except
the second place.
They do that with Manchester City quite a bit.
1 point, bro. 1 point.
I say that because I'm going to ask you guys now. Leal Abada clearly is the man of the match here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Should have been player of the week for MLS. Did make the team of the match, did. Wasn't player of the week somehow.
Without Leal Abada, who is your man of the match?
Oh, God.
I mean, it's a good question. It's something to ponder.
I thought Milando was everywhere. I thought he was everywhere. I don't know. Especially, I really am thinking about the second half, especially when we had the lead. I feel like he made the most crucial tackles.
I don't think that's a man of the match performance from Milando.
You don't think so?
On the second goal, I thought he could have been a little more aggressive to try to block the cross going across him, but
if not Westy.
I'm really surprised you chose a defenseman, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes. I just never years thought you would have chosen a defenseman.
I just remember seeing him dive for block shots and stuff like that. I just thought it was a lot of heroics. But Ashley West would look good to me.
I'm going
to
come with the obvious choice for me. And, you know, you say take Leal out of it, and it kind of doesn't count. Like, this guy that I'm about to say, he had the assist to Abada for the third goal. Brant Bronico. Brant Bronico is my secondary man of the match easily. There's a case for Ajimong, but Brant Bronico the guy just runs his ass off. I mean, granted, Almada did have the goal off of a weird, wacky deflection ball that fell to him just perfectly. Bronico was everywhere on the pitch. I need to look at his heat map, but like, in addition to the assist, he was balling out. He just runs for days. Like, people are like, this is now three different Charlotte FC managers who just can't bring themselves to leave Brant Bronico out of the starting 11 because they know he's just going to run and run and run and run for the entire 90 minutes. And it's a beautiful thing. I thought he just played like a madman, got the assist, and he was awesome. I love BB13.
It's a great call out, and it's a fantastic assist. I mean, specifically because when you slow it down and you take a look what Brant did in that moment, he was able to slow things down himself.
Right, right.
He picked his head up.
Yes.
He saw Leal.
Yep.
He had a few more touches and then put it right on his foot.
Yeah.
That type
for the
of
first
action,
time finish.
That type of action in the final third is exactly what you need from somebody who plays in that hybrid midfield role, somebody that can get into the final third. And the other thing that Brant does too, Danny, is he initiates the defensive press from the midfield.
Yes.
Well, he really helps the attackers.
Yeah,
play defense on that front line.
He made it hard on those guys. I think I know MLS pretty well, and yet I look at Atlanta United's roster. I'm like, who are these guys? You know, like I'm thinking to myself, who is this guy Saba and who is this guy Chande Silva? I've never heard of some of these guys. And Saba's a DP, so that's on me for not knowing them. But at the same time, these are not like MLS superstars, and Bronny just like made them their life hell in the press, like you said.
I agree with you that it's Brant Bronico. He's got the assist. He puts in a great shift after he played on Wednesday as well. So cheers to you for that. We can certainly agree. And it's the bro who has a fantastic match, and he's somebody that this team is still leaning on. I think that's a good thing because it's when we talk about Brant Bronico, right, he kind of falls into that category of a squad player.
Right.
Somebody that a manager really needs. And somebody that can play a lot of minutes, just like Ashley Westwood plays a lot of minutes. By the way, I saw Ashley Westwood today at Rhino South Park.
Love it.
Was stopping over there doing some work with Hot Fly, making sure Rhino South Park had what they needed this week. And there was Ashley.
Ash just stepped in.
Having a pint at around 12:30 p.m. on a Monday. I said, good for you, man. Celebrating the win. Enjoy your day off.
Shit, man. He needs to get drunk enough to convince himself to play the 10. Fuck.
Did you see that he's top three in distance covered in the entire MLS this year?
He's number two. Yeah.
34 years old. What? Wild.
What's crazy is that three of the top five are Colorado Rapids. That blew my mind when I saw that graphic. But, yeah, Ashley Westwood on the heel. Cole Bassett is like a young, up-and-coming U.S. Men's Nationals type of prospect who's number one in the league. And Ashley Westwood right behind him, number two. Absolutely amazing for distance cover this season. Loved that stat.
Since you mentioned Brant Bronico just and now Ashley Westwood, I want to talk about Patrick Ajimong in a minute. But
sure.
Let's just talk about kind of the strength that this midfield may have become over the last month or so, because Brant Bronico becomes healthy again.
Yep.
Ben Bender becomes healthy again. Junior Urso is healthy again.
Yep.
He starts this match.
Yep.
Jabril Diani is somebody that's had a really positive impact on this club as well.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, it feels like the midfield is a pretty strong unit that has critical depth.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's especially with the hectic schedule of like the Wednesday, Saturday games, like you have to rely on your squad guys. Yeah. And I mean, Bronico to come off the bench and to like put in a shift like that just cannot be talked about enough. Like whenever I expect Diani to make the lineup almost every game. And when I saw Junior Urso was in there instead of him, I was like, don't know how I feel about this. But, I mean, all these guys, this is what the best thing about depth is. These guys are constantly competing for a starting spot, and it elevates everyone. Was a high tide,
competition
rises all boats,
competition
stuff
for
like
places.
That.
They've been harping on it all year.
I would call it, at this point, if my math is right, it's 6-3.
Yeah.
But it's really
Give you Mitch Pekovic.
7-3. Really, 6-2 because Westwood's
right. Westwood's a lock. Yeah, he's the captain.
Not coming out.
Yeah,
it's Westwood's unstated goal to play every minute this season, 100%.
So it's Ben Bender.
Sometimes that means a Monday beer.
Nikola Pekovic, Brant Bronico, Junior Urso,
Diani.
For two places,
could you throw Diagra in there? Maybe he's played the 10, but he's more in a winger now. You could, I guess.
Five or six for two positions, which is
if
you're Dean Smith on a week-to-week basis looking at your squad and thinking about a run of fixtures, because remember, we're playing the League's Cup next month.
Yeah.
Yep.
And there's going to be a lot of games, hopefully, in the League's Cup. If this team should, based on its current form, be able to get out of the group stage in the League's Cup, get into the knockout round, add more games to that. A shame that the U.S. Open competition wasn't part of the schedule this season, because I think Charlotte FC has enough depth to do well in the U.S. Open Cup as well. It just, you take a look at this midfield, and all of a sudden you start to feel pretty good about it.
I feel good about it. It's the strongest it's ever been in club history, right? We can definitely say that.
For sure.
Westwood sets the tone as a captain and as a guy who just is going to give his all, and Bronny's just... If you find yourself sitting out, like let's say you're, you know, Diani or Petco, and you look out and you're like, oh, Bronny's starting, like, I got to work as hard as that guy if I want to have a chance to get in now, because he's working harder than anyone. So I think that's good. It's not like you can say what you want about relative talent levels. I think they all have a fairly similar talent level, and it's really about characteristics and work rate when it comes to making the decisions.
Scott Arfield has had a couple starts at the number 10 position
as well,
so you could potentially put Scott Arfield.
And we're looking for a number 10 right now.
Right?
Right, yeah, and we want to sign a DP number 10, you know, in the summer window. That's still 6 weeks away, but yeah, not the worst idea.
So let's talk about Patrick Ajimong. Let's talk about the striker.
How long are we into the episode here?
23 minutes.
And it's taken 23 minutes to get to PA? Because he had a hell of a game as well.
He did.
He certainly did. And first, let's talk about his inclusion. Danny,
sure.
You covered the press conference on Friday.
Yeah.
Brams, you did.
Match day minus two presser, as always.
I'm trying to say Brams in bracket because I've got the two Danny's
today. So you can't even say Danny B. You know, it's like, yeah. You can't even say Danny B-R-A. You know, it's a problem, but good problem to have.
Our audio listeners know who I'm directing my energy towards when I'm asking these questions.
The consummate host, Johnny Hayes, the man himself.
Patrick Ajimong, you covered the press conference. Dean Smith, he told us that Patrick Ajimong was on the injury report, but he said something else. And you were were?
Yeah.
You on Sunday morning had a feeling that he would get the start.
Well,
how did you read the tea leaves so well?
As you all know, I pay pretty close attention to these press conferences. And I actually was not at the presser, but I watched it back pretty closely. And, you know, our boy Willie P is always going to fire right out of the gate. Like, what's the availability report? That's always going to be the first question to Dean. And he said, you know, Patrick is feeling bruises on his ankle. And if the game was today, he wouldn't start. And then he moved on to some other stuff and a couple other questions. And then Willie P came back with the follow. And he goes, elaborate a little bit about how you feel about Ajimong. And Dean said, well, he's a young lad. He's hurting right now. It's going to be hard for him to feature, but 48 hours is a long time. And if you talk about tea leaves, I hear that comment, 48 hours is a long time. I'm thinking, yeah, 48 hours is a long time, especially when you're 23 years old and you're freaking, like, human Wolverine. Like, you figure Patrick, like, for all his other great physical attributes, he's probably pretty good at healing, too, you know? And, like, I just thought to myself, there's a bye week after this. So I'm thinking, after this, there's 2 weeks off before the next game. So I'm thinking to myself, if Patrick can go, he will go. And I think with the bye week and the extra day of rest, the match being on Sunday instead of Saturday, I was just like, until I see a lineup come out that doesn't have Patrick in it, I think he is going to still start at the 11, even though he was questionable on the report.
It was a great shout, a great call, and you got that right.
I've got the receipts.
He does have the receipts as well. Is he giving his heart and soul for this club right now, Patrick Ajimong? We all know that Ashley Westwood and Brant Bronico are two players that will put in the shift. They'll do the hard minutes. But Patrick Ajimong right now, to me, is almost setting the standard for this club.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, the guy works his socks off. And I feel like he spends majority of his time on the ground, not like Copetti used to do, flopping, but he just gets fouled constantly. Yeah. Like, actually fouled, like hard fouls. Because these center backs do not know how to deal with them. I mean, I remember it was like the 87th minute, and Tiger sends a ball down the line, and the center back doesn't expect him to get there. He gets there, and they basically football tackle each other to the ground.
Yeah, it was almost a fourth.
And they called a foul on him.
I don't know. I know exactly what you're talking about. That was an insane play, because, like, the fact they called out the other way, I was like, what? Because he kind of grabbed an arm, but they gang tackled him.
Center backs do not know how to deal with Patrick Ajimong. Yeah. I mean, scouting or not. Right. You can't stop the guy. Agree. And so you got to foul him. And that's what they do constantly.
He's always looking, Patrick is, for shoulder-to-shoulder contact.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Because he knows his shoulder is stronger.
Yes. And so he's the type of player that looks for the contact. He's the type of number nine that isn't afraid of the contact.
That's he feeds off it.
He does feed off
it. It's like he absorbs your energy and takes it into himself.
The one thing that I can't wrap my mind around quite yet is why he isn't a threat on the end of a corner.
He doesn't seem to want it, like heading wise, like aerial duels. He doesn't seem to be as interested as that as the hold up play.
I would have to look at the stats, but I don't think he gets enough chances. I think we're one of the worst crossing teams in the league. Our crosses are horrible. Our crosses, we send these sky ball crosses. I turned away from the screen in disgust once in the first half when Kerwin had like two guys waiting for him in the box and he sent it over their heads out of bounds. We send more sky ball over the head out of bounds crosses than any team I watch in this league. That's something that needs to improve ASAP.
You know who knows that? Enzo Copetti.
Enzo started for Rosario Central.
I saw that. Yeah.
He started with his new club already.
No.
He didn't, but they drew 1-1. So there you go. He had a 7.1 rating from SoFi. He probably did decent, but I didn't watch any of the action. But
Enzo Copetti is somebody that also knows that aerial service
is poor.
Is very poor for this club right now. And I'm not even talking about crosses. I'm talking about corners, which, you know, go down as a cross for sure.
Yeah.
But I'd like to see Charlotte FC be more threatening off of a corner.
We scored off
that's
one.
Why I was glad Yere was back. I really do like Yere's corners for sure. I think he sends a nice corner. I like Westwood, obviously, on corners. I like Vargas on corners. I like Abad on corners. But Yere, having him back, I mean, he had the corner kick cross that led to the own goal. So you got to give him credit for that.
Yere had a phenomenal game.
Yesterday. Yeah, I think he did get beat.
He helped start them. I'm talking about in the
attack. He was great.
Side.
Yeah, he was in the, from. Yeah, he was doing a lot of overlapping runs. I definitely think he was. As much as I love JP, Yere's veteran presence was much needed.
He
in
was
this
part
match.
Of the move for the third goal.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, 100%. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, they all were. Team goal, right?
It was. Team goal. Yeah, I mean, he was was the one who got it on the wing, gave Leo Obata space to kind of go more centrally, plays Bronico down the line, then Bronico cuts back to Obata. Yeah. So, I mean, if he didn't make that run forward, Obata's not on the six waiting for the ball. So he created that with his movement.
100%. Yes, I thought he was absolutely
fin to win, baby. Let's go.
That's a type of thing that as this team continues to get better and you start to see some class show,
yeah,
like the movement that Yeri Yurinen has is just quality.
Yeah.
Right? Because after he passes, he knows to move. Mm-hmm. It's not a pass and stand. It's a pass and move. Right. And a lot of times players pass and stand at a lower level. And to see his constant movement, I think, is a really, really big asset for Dean Smith at that left back position.
It's the movement that creates the space. You pass it, and then you move, and then there's all of a sudden there's space somewhere else. Yeah.
Yes.
I like the way that the team really got, like, one thing I problem that I have with Charlotte FC is what I consider to be extra touches, lack of first time plays, you know, like, hey, why not just first time pass it instead of taking touch, look around and pass it? I mean, I know our guys are trying to be protective of the ball, but I see way too often, I've said this before on the show, like, too much, it's like a basketball swinging around the key, you know, and it's just like, get it in there. And I think they did a much better job of that in the second half against Atlanta.
I think that comes with confidence, too. You know, off a bad loss, I felt like they saw themselves grow into the game, and as the game went on, they got more and more confident, and you saw the quality of play rise as well. And so after an away game, it really sucks that there's a two-week break, because I feel like this is a perfect time to strike when the iron's hot, and it's a bummer that...
I think our team needs a two-week break.
You think so?
I think they need a two-week break for sure. I think it's rest and regen time.
I'm not sure the team needs a 2 week break, but I think Pat does.
Yeah, Ojemon
and
for
Westwood.
Sure.
And Westy.
Because Westy's going to play. Westy really wants to play every minute, but I think he got a yellow card erased, but then he got another one versus Red Bulls, right? If I'm not mistaken. You can double check me on that, but I think he's on suspension watch again.
He's been chirping enough lately.
Yeah. I thought he was going to get one against Atlanta. Double check me on that, Tifos, please, for sure. But I wanted to say that. When we're talking about Ojemon, I don't want to get too far past that discussion before bringing up, like, he earned very high plaudits from a lot of observers for his hold-up play. And even though he didn't score a goal, what he did really well against Atlanta was hold up the play. And I think, and this is another thing that Danny Higginbottom kept harping on over and over, which was you can't just have a lone guy, as you know, it doesn't matter how big he is. I mean, it did work one time with Derek Jones last year, obviously, but... You can't just have him be up there as a forward operating base all on his own and just kick the ball up to him and expect him to hold it up for 30 seconds before to get guys up there. You have to work it. You have to work the ball up the field to him so that when he does get it, guys are standing next to him. And Charlotte FC did a poor job of that in the first half. In the second half, they did a way better job. When Lael started the move that led to his first goal, he kicked it to Patrick, and Vargas is right up there with him. And it was because Lael brought the ball forward instead of he won possession at near the center circle in his own half. He could have just kicked it up to Patrick, but instead he dribbled up. That allows Patrick and Kerwin to be standing in complementary places when the pass goes, and then you've got a front three combination goal, like you said, Johnny.
It's really special to see him play that way, and there's important context here, right? Because the own goal creates some momentum.
Yep.
Create some belief.
Uncle Mo.
Leal Obata comes, Charlotte FC's only designated player. Love Uncle Mo. You know, one of the best Funkles out there, for sure. Uncle Mo's the best. When you've got it, you've got things for you.
He brings the best gifts at Christmas time, for sure.
Yes, he does. He'll even, you know, slip some underage kids a couple beers, too. But without that own goal, I don't think Leal Obata goes on to score two goals in the second half.
I agree. It was crucial.
So I just want to... You know, set the table and have a conversation about not just the match, but just the club and the standings and the goal scoring as a whole, right? Because now you add three goals to the 15 goal total going into this match, and you've got 18 goals through
17 matches,
games,
yep.
Which is the halfway point of the season.
Correct, yep.
We've reached the halfway point of the season.
Which we have, but we're actually, like, a lot of other teams have game in hand on us now. So this bye, like, when you look at the table right now, just be careful. I would look at the table after this bye week before I really start making an analysis, but keep going.
Totally,
I didn't mean to cut you off.
I'm not talking about that. Yeah. As far as where they stand on the table, I'm talking about now
goals for
18 goals through 17 games.
Still not enough for me in this league, but it's better.
The three goals on Sunday, the Derby win on Sunday, I think has done a really nice service for the club. Not a lot of chirping is going to be happening
right
over the next couple weeks.
Well, except us chirping at Atlanta for all their social media fails and everything else, for sure.
Not a lot of criticism heading the club's way over these next couple weeks about lack of goal scoring.
Right.
After not scoring goals.
Right. You can't come with those questions after a three-goal performance. Yeah. Which I had those questions locked and loaded in the chamber, for sure, if we hadn't scored them.
Right. So my question is, did it change anything? Did these three goals on Sunday change anything? Change the fact that Charlotte FC is having a really difficult time scoring goals this season? In the first season in club history, they scored 44 goals. In the second season in club history, they scored 45 goals. They're on pace now to score 36, and they were on pace before this match to only score 30.
I don't think it changes that much. Like I said on the pregame live show, it really depends on who we sign in the summer. We're still lacking quality. At the end of the day, Atlanta just had an absolute meltdown, and we finally saw some good patterns of play.
You don't think – I don't – Leal Abadi's not lacking quality, is he?
No. Well, he also finally started and played, like, 75 minutes. So that is the big –
Yeah,
the big change that's happened from the last month.
At Red Bulls is just at Red Bulls. It's a bugaboo for the club. You can almost call that game a wash.
Yeah,
for sure.
In the pouring rain, you had the whole time too for like an hour.
Yeah, but they didn't score a goal in the two matches before that either.
Yeah, we also have conceded five goals in the last two.
Which Abadi didn't play in. Well, Abadi was a late sub.
Right.
Yeah.
So I bring up this point because I didn't want to start the show with this because you talk about lack of quality. I'm curious what you think, Danny. About the lack of goal scoring. Yes, we're coming up. It's really two goals. Atlanta gifted us the goal. They put it in their own net.
Yeah.
It's two goals on the road in Atlanta. It's a massive Derby win. The coach gets sacked. It's totally legitimate. But from a big picture point of view, I'm trying to make an effort not to get too caught up in one result and still have a big picture conversation about the rest of this season and what we can expect as supporters of the club.
Well, I'm going to need Leal Abadi to start having performances like that week in and week out, really. I mean, he's the $8 million man. He's brought in to make things happen. I love his versatility. He went from the right wing to the left wing, back to the right wing. He was centrally located for his brace. And he needs to start cranking out like a goal a game, you know, to really get this team back as far as pace where it needs to go. Like, if you say 18 goals in 17 games, that's just barely over one per game, and we need to be over 1.5 per game, really.
Less than one goal per game going into this.
Right.
And Chicho at Salt Lake.
Right, Chicho Arango, my MVP this year, by the way.
He's
amazing.
On Saturday night, he scored his 16th goal of the season to lead the goal to boot rates.
Right.
When I woke up Sunday morning, I thought to myself, he has more goals himself than our entire team does this season.
And one of them was scored from his own half.
Yeah.
He caught Stuver off the line on Saturday night. Yeah, amazing goal. Love Chicho.
Great.
Hate Real Salt Lake, love Chicho, though, for sure.
You mentioned Abadi and what he's got to do to really help us and elevate our final third. You know one thing that we were critical of is the crossing. I thought every single time he took a man on and crossed it was an extremely dangerous ball. And our forwards are so used to shitty delivery, they didn't even fucking anticipate.
Right.
Pat just watched the ball go across the six and just couldn't believe it.
I know one.
Seriously.
I know exactly the player
Danny
thinking
Higginbottom
of.
Danny Higginbottom was like,
Leal was pissed.
What a ball. And he was like, just like, what
Pat
the hell, guys?
And Leal was like, what the
He thought
Leal
that was
going to
go 30 feet above his head. He couldn't believe it.
The commentator's like, if Ajimong just follows the play there, he's got a
gamble
in header. Yeah.
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 If you're not clinical in Dean Smith's current system, then it's going to be a desert of goals.
Oh,
might
yeah.
as well be the Sahara.
Right,
like, you have to take your chances.
Well, he keeps talking about
not score a lot of goals.
We create. He's like, as long as we're creating chances, I'm not mad. You know, scoring goals is the hardest thing to do in this game. You know, he says that all the time. It starts to wear a little thin. So I'm glad that we don't have to hear it again for the next 2 weeks during the bye, for sure.
So it's the halfway point of the season, and I'm happy on this show to be sitting here after a win for Charlotte FC. I believe we're sitting in fifth place.
Top five. You know. Is that our first time ever in the top five?
I'm not sure.
It might be. It might be close.
But I do think it's important for me to be honest with our tremendous friends of the show, and to say that when I think about the first half of the season, other than this performance in the Derby match, other than the win against NYCFC, you mentioned the Columbus win as well. To me, that has an asterisk, and the reason why it does is because they played up a man for basically 65 minutes in that match.
Sure. Thanks, Derek.
It's been a really difficult slog.
Yeah. Oh, it's been a slog for sure. That's a great word.
It has not been easy to support this club because the football that they play is very defensive. The football that they play is not ambitious. And the football that Dean Smith has brought to this club is something that you really have to take with a grain of salt. And I'll just be honest, it's not my brand of football, and I don't like it. I'm here, and I'm going to deal with it, but I don't like it.
It's funny because it's not the way that I would have pictured a Dean Smith club to be. Like, I think of Dino at his Aston Villa days, who were just high-flying, wingers running up and down, Jack Grealish running the show. And that's my picture in my head when Dean Smith was hired. And I forget his spells at Norwich and Leicester, where he was just trying to do salvage jobs that didn't work, but got it in those jobs. He got kind of a reputation for just playing negative football. So, I don't know. What do you think, Danny?
I mean, at the end of the day, we talk about Villa. The game plan was, all right, lads, you find that guy, number 10, and let him do his thing. I mean, we don't have a player like that. Right. Maybe Abada can turn into that guy. And I saw him, you know, I feel like Kerwin Vargas especially, he stays very wide during most games. Lille, like you mentioned, the long balls to Pat. I feel like Lille Abada was kind of like an inverted winger at times, kind of picking up the ball in the spaces. Yeah. I feel like as he gets going, more match fitness, more, he's going to be everywhere. And the game plan will be just to get Lille Abada the ball. Westwood especially, head up, find him, let him create every single time.
I think the way I would summarize the way that I feel after that Atlanta match is that Lille Abada's performance has given me hope
that
he can be the singular player that makes Dean Smith's tactics bearable.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, he just got engaged. He's got his legs under him in a new country. He's probably feeling himself. He's back from injury. He's got to know his teammates better than ever. He's saying all the right things in the press conferences. I think Lille Abada is a budding superstar in this league, and I know we've said that about Patrick in the past, and I think that's certainly true of Abada.
Well, I think...
I hope, maybe I'm just hope wish casting here a little bit.
$8 million is a high figure. You better be a star at some point.
Right.
Yeah. And to put Patrick and Leal in that same sentence, to me, I'm just like, well, yeah, we said Patrick could be a budding star, but the actual roadmap to that happening is a long runway.
Right, with a contract extension or two along the way.
The Alabada, he's on an aircraft carrier.
That
fighter jet is taken off in about,
right.
It's got about 30 yards of runway, and then it's got to fly.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's the Alabada. Patrick
no
Bajerman,
doubt. It needs to happen quick for him.
It's a big Boeing who's got the longest runway in the country, and we're going to get him some momentum, we're going to get him some speed, and he's going to be able to take off.
Mm-hmm.
But the Alabada needs to be able to get up quick.
I'm not expecting him to challenge Arango for the Golden Boot at this point. It's far too late for that to happen. But, like, if we have 17 matches left, I'd like to see 10 more goals from him at the very least, for sure.
Top goal scorer, top assister, two things that can be easily be done. I mean, our top goal scorer is Abada and Pat tied with 3, I think. So,
did Ben Bender get any minutes yesterday?
No,
he
did not.
Surprised by that?
Slightly.
We were hanging on for dear life at that end.
But I would
end.
Say in general, and I should have jumped in the Dean Smith post game presser. Something came up right when it started, sadly, but right after the match ended. But I wanted to know a little bit about the subs, because the subs came late. The subs came pretty late for me. I don't think there was any subs till after the 75th minute. And, you know, we eventually did get some guys in. Diagra came in really late as a time-wasting sub. But I'm like, Dino, like, you're trying to hold on to a 3-2 lead here. Like, subs, you know? Like, can we manage it a little bit? I would have loved to hear a little more perspective on that as to why the subs came so late. Do you have any thoughts or ideas? I mean, because you're holding on for dear life.
Yeah, I mean, Diani, that one made a lot of sense. I'm surprised there wasn't, like, a Jalen Lindsay thrown in there or a Bill Tioma maybe go to a back five. the Brecht Diagra and the Tiger Small substitutions didn't make much sense to me. I just think
Tiger came in for Liel.
Yeah, he got really. I think Liel was just gassed, and Tiger's the first man up.
He was gassed for sure. I like Tiger. I thought Tiger was in contention to start if Adjamon couldn't go, but
yeah.
Overall, I thought it was a dangerous game to be playing, to be holding your substitutions that late with a slim lead on the road when they're putting the pressure on.
And let's not sugarcoat it. We scraped by the last 10 minutes. I mean, those were nervy.
It was like, blow the whistle, blow
please.
The whistle. Blow
and then
the whistle.
7 minutes came up, and I was like, shit.
Yeah, it was a lot of injury time.
Flashbacks from last year. I was like, please just hold on for this 3 points. And I mean, we got it done.
You've got to hold on, and they pulled it off. There's been how many times has... What's up, Jason? How many times has Charlotte FC not pulled it off? How many times has Charlotte FC against tried to scrape by?
Against NYC at home earlier this year. At New York, excuse me, earlier this year. Yeah, they scored late.
How many times has that happened? So I'm not going to sit here and be like, well, Atlanta almost scored. There's a problem here. I'm going to be like, no, they didn't score.
Yeah.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
Thank the Lord. Yeah.
I agree with that.
They saw one out. And I think the time-wasting substitution is a good one. And, you know, for me personally, it would have been nice to see potentially, Pat to get called off the field, right? Like, I don't understand for me personally why Liel Abada comes out, maybe just for some length or some height. Patrick Adjamon remains in the. Why isn't it Tiger for Pat in that situation when Liel has scored two goals?
Or Scott or Bender for Pat.
Take a toothpick to these substitutions. Because I guess they were late.
I just think Liel Abada just didn't have full 90 in his legs.
Okay.
I think he looked just gassed. He did a lot while he was on the pitch.
Dino gave him a huge hug.
Yeah, I think he gave Louie all he had.
You know, for sure. Some gave all gave some.
It is interesting, though. You would have thought maybe after the goal, late goal by Ben Bender, he might have given a shot. Instead of Diagra, who hasn't done much this season, maybe Ben will be higher in the pecking order come soon. But maybe he just wanted some veteran experience with Diani and Brecht Diagra coming in late.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's why Urso started, was experience.
Yeah.
For sure.
Which he leans on quite a bit, so.
It's June 3rd. We're at the halfway point of the MLS season. Leagues Cup is coming next month.
Yeah.
I think we've got about four games before Leagues Cup. Five games before Leagues Cup at this point.
I think six, yeah.
Six games before Leagues Cup.
Yeah.
So we're going
to including a midweek. But we have Charlotte has a really nice schedule. It's push time because the next two matches are home matches against teams below Charlotte in the standings, DC and Orlando.
Orlando, yes.
Winnable games.
Yeah, those are winnable games. And then I think we go to Philadelphia, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
I'd have to call
that
in front of me. But I know, and then
Columbus,
and
too.
Then Columbus is further down the road, actually, because I think it's Philadelphia, and then maybe there's one other game that I'm forgetting, and then it's Miami at home on July 3rd. And then it's the trip to Austin shortly after that, and then it's Leagues Cup.
But, I mean, some winnable games, especially the first two right off the break. D.C. and Orlando are two, and then I think Houston's a winnable game.
Cincy is the game I might be missing.
So there's
eight
games. Yeah. There's eight games.
Oh, wow.
Leagues Cup. So
and it's push time. It's time to push and get points.
Cramped schedule, too.
I didn't realize that the club would play 24 of its or 25 of its matches
right
before Leagues Cup even starts. I didn't realize that there was like a 9-game
run out
race
yeah.
to the finish after Leagues yeah. Cup is over. Interesting. I don't hate that idea, but it just feels like what it feels like is it's like MLS's way to do what Liga MX does, to have two different seasons within one season.
Kind
I'm just
of,
surprised.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind if Leagues Cup moved up a little bit. Like
yeah.
you played like 15 or 16 games, played Leagues Cup, and then came back for the second half of the season.
Yeah, they may do
just
that in the future. Yeah, they may do that in the future.
Just a thought.
I think it's probably because of the Euros and the Copa America, if I had to guess, scheduling-wise.
Right.
I think that's probably...
You know what? I'm glad that you brought that up, because something that really rubbed me the wrong way was Columbus getting absolutely fucking smoked by Pachuca.
Yep.
And MLS having a full match night the same
That was
night.
Bad. That's really that's the league shooting itself in the foot. There was no focus on the champions, CONCACAF champions.
Why not Sunday or Friday? Like, no games going on other than us yesterday.
Yeah, but it's not like it. You know, when the Champions League final is being played, it's a one game window.
Right. Yeah.
for all of Europe to watch, for the entire world to watch. Yeah. If the Champions Cup wants to become something, if MLS wants to take the Champions Cup seriously, then the final should be played in a solo time slot.
I agree.
Not up against 15 other fucking matches.
I think the best spot would have been Saturday afternoon before the MLS. So you watch the Champions Cup final, and it's like, oh, we got a full MLS slate after this. It's like a great kind of... it's like a feature event that with a great follow-up. Instead, it's at 9:15, which is a weird time just in and of itself, and half the MLS games are reaching their concluding right at that time. Like it's the witching hour for MLS, and all
West
of a
Coast
sudden, it's a that was a horrible own goal, and I don't know how much coordination MLS can do with CONCACAF in that situation, but like they gotta realize they have common interests and they need to work together.
There's plenty of things to complain about MLS. I'll say one thing I was happy about. Charlotte FC playing on a Sunday. I felt like I finally got to enjoy a nice MLS slate and watch multiple teams play throughout, you know, the night.
Did you learn anything?
I just enjoyed it.
You learned you enjoy a nice MLS?
I mean, I always do. It just like felt like every time I'm so... Yeah, I'll take one, actually.
Yeah, we're doing, I've got Del Patio.
I'll have the number six.
I'm good.
Thank you. All right.
Oh, then, yeah, give me a Money Trees, please. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. But I don't know. It just felt nice to just sit on my ass and not have to worry about Charlotte FC and just enjoy the slate that was. And a ton of goals. I watched RSL absolutely crush. I enjoyed watching RSL. I think they're one of the better teams in the league. I watched a little bit of Portland.
They brutalized my boy Brad Stuver.
Yeah, they did.
Stuver is one of my favorite goalkeepers in the league for Austin.
Because
he's a great goalkeeper and a better man, you know. He does a lot of community stuff in my old hometown. So yeah.
I want to be clear though. It's like my criticism is coming from a good place.
No, it is.
It always is, and I'm going
to
be critical.
Which is wanting
every
to
watch. I do the show, I'm going to be critical. It's just who I am as a broadcaster. It's what I do, and it just is what it is. Okay. So I'm not going to sit down here on these live shows after. You win a derby match and just suck off MLS. I'm just not going to do it.
That's not what we're here for.
I think the league should improve. And I'm hoping, now that we've got another beer coming, we're going to get to the $650 million say that Tepper's asked for taxpayer money. We're going to get to that here shortly as well, because I've got some thoughts on that. But specifically, being critical or being constructive, you know, there's two ways that people who listen to the show, people that can watch the show, can take how I am, right? You can either say, this guy's a fucking asshole, or he's just doing critical thinking on the show. You decide.
Can you be both? No, I'm
sometimes
playing.
Yes.
No, I'm just kidding.
Sometimes yes, I can. Yes, I certainly can be both sometimes, but I want this league to become what I think it could be.
Right. Yeah. And Sleeping Giant.
And part
it's
of that...
It's that simple, and let's not get... Let's not sit back and just accept it for what it is. Let's continue to try to push it forward.
Yeah.
And I think people with microphones, people who have platforms, people that can cause or create real civic discussion around topics are the people that are going to help that happen.
Yeah, and I agree. And everything you're saying is coming from a place of wanting to showcase the ultimate continental competition final that we have here in North America. So there's nothing wrong with it for sure. Right. What I will say is... It wouldn't have been much of a match because Columbus was absolutely shell-shocked. I don't know if you guys saw any of the reporting after, but as we get some beer deliveries here on the Charlotte Soccer Show, thank you so much. Cheers to you.
Everybody knows Jason at Salute.
Jason. Exactly. Well, he got where I was trying to hint at, which was, Columbus manager Wilfred Nancy after the match said, hey, I'm not trying to make excuses, but like all my guys had the runs for the last 24 hours, thanks to and he kind of intimated that maybe there was something shady with the hotel that they were staying at, but he's like, I don't want to complain, but then he went on to complain, that type of move. So I don't know, not the best showing by Columbus. He's like, hey, they beat us 3-0. It is what it is, but I don't think Columbus was in the best position to play that match.
They also have to come up with a neutral site final.
Yes.
And I understand, right? And this is the point. The competition isn't at a place culturally that... But what if the neutral... Like Houston would be a great place.
Somewhere in Texas.
Or the Rose Bowl.
Or the Rose Bowl. California or Texas makes a ton of sense.
Let's do a neutral site champions, CONCACAF champions, right. Cup final.
Yeah.
Right.
Right? And
for fuck's sake.
And honestly, the champions, got, what they have to do in that situation is just admit to themselves, like, yeah, for the first, like, 4 or 5 years, we might only sell 60% of the tickets because it's tough to ask people to travel, especially MLS clubs.
Yeah, but Pachuca fans will travel.
Oh, the Liga MX squad.
Yeah.
It's the MLS clubs that might not travel.
That's why MLS Cup is not played at a neutral site. It's like they tried it, and it didn't work. The crowds were dead.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. But if it's going to be a...
It's a little shorter notice for MLS Cup. They have fair warning for the CONCACAF Cup,
it's
for sure.
It's a schedule.
Yeah.
And there's only certain teams in there.
Yeah.
And when you want to have long-term success, you have to take a short-term hit sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the competition needs to take a short-term hit and say, you know, we don't know how many people are going to show up next season, but we're going to do it at a neutral site, and we're going to try to make this competition something that people in the United States look at as the pinnacle of North American and Central American soccer.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is. Because Liga MX right now, Danny, I mean, we talked about Vasquez.
Yeah, B-Vaz.
Brandon Vasquez heading from Cincinnati down to Liga MX. Big price paid there.
Yeah.
And Atlanta. Giamakis came on in the second half, didn't he?
He did.
Georgios Giamakis looks headed to Cruz Azul for $10
million.
Yeah.
Liga MX coming to MLS and taking some of the best players in this league.
Kate Cowell, too, who went in
Kate
the summer.
Yeah, Kate Cowell as well, after Chivas. Yeah, for sure.
This is happening right now, right here. And you have to – MLS needs to take a look in the mirror and say, like, do we want Liga MX taking our best players?
Right.
Because that's literally happening as we are sitting here talking.
Yep.
And that's why this Champions Cup can become such a great competition.
And I mean,
because these two leagues are great rivals if they want to be.
Giamakis is from Greece. It's not like they're getting guys with like sort of like Hispanic heritage or anything. It's not that they're targeting like regional like bond there. They're going for the best players. And Giamakis has been one of the best players, goal scorers in MLS the last couple of years.
Who was playing striker for Pacheco? Solomon Rondon?
Rondon. From Everton, 38 years old.
From West
still
Bromwich
chugging.
Albion.
Yeah.
West Bromwich Albion legend.
He's
got
a brace,
Rondon,
I'm pretty sure, which is hilarious.
He had a great final. He's a player who's achieved a lot on the global stage.
Oh, yeah.
Liga MX knows how to do a really nice job. Right. Get him into the club, have him play the nine, and win him a trophy.
They've been from Gignac to Florian Tovan, who didn't really work out that well at Tigres, but like. MX is targeting Europe more and more, to a level that MLS could learn from, for sure.
Club America has that winger that is like a fringe U.S. national team player. I'm completely blanking on his name right now, but they have some stars as well. They haven't even mentioned them. I mean, at the end of the day, we could talk about this, and it matters because, you know, like we want this league to become a big league, but we also need the figureheads in MLS to speak out, and I feel like they're just soldiers at this point.
I will speak up that it does sometimes go the other way. Jonah Rodriguez is scoring goals for Portland Timbers. He came from Cruz Azul. That's who's being replaced by Giamakis. So it's not that it never happens, but, like, we would want more flow from Mexico to United States, Canada, when it comes down to it, like from Liga MX to MLS, if we're really going to see MLS grow and become like a higher stature league, for sure.
So MLS is approaching now 30 teams. San Diego will be the 30th team in the league.
And they're bringing in Lozano, Mexican national superstar who's had a great couple seasons in Europe.
Liga MX, obviously a great league as well.
Why didn't we sign Lozano, by the way?
That would have been great.
I purposely didn't get into the conversation of like, well, Charlotte's got DP spots available. Who are we going to sign this summer? Because I kind of just want that to play out.
Yeah. There's a bye week episode next week, so we can get into that. Yeah.
We could get into that. Or we do an interview. We have a fun interview.
Yeah.
Well, we could do that as well. But, you know, for me specifically, I want to think about this from a big picture point of view, the league, the continent, you know, the whole Western Hemisphere, if you will, right? We're about to see the Copa America competition, North America and South America come together and Central America come together and have one of the best soccer tournaments in the world.
Hell yeah.
I mean, things are just going to become more global, and the sport is just going to continue to grow in that way. So my plea to MLS is get on the bus. Or get left at the stop.
Right.
Because things aren't going to be the way they have been for the last 20 years in this league. Like, you have to grow with the competitions on the Champions League final that you talked about on Full Time Roundup. Great episode. I'm looking forward to listening to that. You and Harrison talked about the Champions League final, Real Madrid, Dortmund. Who didn't watch that match? It's going to be the most watched football match in the world.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, you've just mentioned Copa America in 2 years. We got the World Cup coming to town. I mean, that's global. That. Right. Like, we're staying on the west side here. That's global. Everyone is going to see our soccer culture, and I'm hoping that it's ready for that. Where we the soccer fever kind of takes over the Americas.
Let me just make this point real quick, because I think this is important to say. Charlotte's leading the fucking charge.
Absolutely.
Charlotte is leading the charge. Charlotte is the team that's having 30,000-plus people show up every single weekend. Charlotte is the team that's willing to go out there and hire a Premier League manager like Dean Smith.
Yeah.
Go out there and sign somebody like Leao Abada, who has won trophies
with Celtic,
with Celtic in the Scottish Premier League, right? Charlotte is putting its best foot forward to make this happen.
Charlotte is the city that will host a Copa America semifinal, which could potentially
and a third place match.
Could potentially include Brazil.
And it pains me to say this, but Atlanta has done this too.
Yeah.
Atlanta.
But they're in decline. The thing about Atlanta is they almost peaked in 2018-19, and they've been kind of struggling to hold on to it ever since. So, like, as Charlotte soccer culture grows and takes a foothold, we got to learn from their mistakes as well, I feel, because Atlanta kind of rested on their laurels, and they thought, oh, we can sell Miggy Almiron to the Premier League, and we can you know, like we cannot try to replace Joseph Martinez as he ages out of his effective skill set. And now they're kind of stuck. They did get Almada, but, like, if you're Thiago, they bring in Giacomakis and they sell him within a year and a half. Like, if you're Almada, you're thinking, do I want to stick around here? Almada's about to leave and go play, hang out with Messi for a month at the Copa America. Like, if I'm him, I'm like, get me out of here, you know? So Atlanta's in really bad shape without Thiago Almada. So I love everything that you're saying about Charlotte growing on the soccer scene, both as a club and as a culture here in the city. And we do have things to. Atlanta has done it, but, like, they've also got a negative example that we can learn from as well. And that's my fuck Atlanta diatribe for the people.
I figured that would pop up somewhere. But they do get. The stadium was pretty full yesterday. They did get a nice crowd. And compared to some other cities in the country, Atlanta has done a much better job. And by the way, Atlanta's having the opening match of the Copa America competition.
They need to research a little bit better, though, because. Playing Pepas at the start of the second half and allowing our fans to, like, do the freaking ritual and dance and jump, that was a big own goal. That was a second own goal scored by Atlanta. You know, it didn't go on the scoreboard, but it kind of set the tone for the second half and it showed that their whole stadium operations isn't really into understanding what's going on, you know, with the dynamics.
You cover college football in your day job. Danny Brams is a great producer of the Paul Feinbaum Show on SEC Network.
Doing my best.
You know what a rivalry looks like,
right,
Danny? And for me, what a rivalry looks like is anything you can do, I can do better.
Right.
And that's what Charlotte and Atlanta, that's the vibe these two have.
And
right now,
allow me to quote Zach De La Rocha when I say, know your enemy. You can't be playing your opponent's hype song at the start of the second half in your own building. That's insane.
Yeah, no comment there. I don't know what to say to that. I can't believe they did that. I mean, someone didn't do their homework, obviously.
So when we talk about talent, when we talk about transfer windows, there was one thing. You mentioned Edilson Milana earlier in the show.
I did.
When I was watching this broadcast, and I think it was pregame, they were talking about, or right when the game was about to start, they were talking about Edilson Milana. And the commentator says, well, Dean Smith says Edilson Milana can play in the Premier League if he wants to.
He said that mid-game.
Yeah, I heard that.
Mid-game,
yeah,
he said that.
In about the first 20 minutes.
I was oh, wow, okay.
My first thought was, Dean, shut the fuck up.
My second thought was,
well, maybe he could.
Yeah.
But come on, let's not actively promote that our players could go play in the Premier League.
Maybe the championship. I mean,
inflate that price, though. That's
well, they were bragging up because, like, they're like, he even played right back a few times last year and looked comfortable.
I brought that up. Because
not sure he has the pace,
you
to be
talked
honest,
about,
but yeah.
You know, the transfers, like somebody like Almada saying, "Hey, I want to go somewhere else."
Yeah,
but I think as Charlotte FC grows into itself, what it wants to become, and it's the adult version of a club, considering it's still only 2.5 years old. Do you want to grow into the club that brings in young players to sell them off?
Right.
Or do you want to grow into the club that brings in young players and pays them well and keeps them around for their entire career? I very much prefer that.
I think they're going for number A or number one. I think that is fully the intent here. I think that these guys are projects, and hopefully to turn for double the money in 3 years, and then we go get another one. Because we have the scouting department. We've done it time and time again.
That's the middle path for me, is you sell, but you replenish.
And see, that's what Atlanta didn't do, to go back to that. And sorry to come back.
No, of
course. They sold all these guys. They sold Miguel Almiron, and they signed Pitty Martinez.
Right.
And he flopped.
And he was a total bust.
And then Barco flopped. Like, all these guys.
Barco was more of an attitude flop than a performance flop, but yes.
It's a flop nonetheless. All I'm saying is, like, you have to hit on these transfers.
He slept with Brandon Vasquez's fiance, and then Brandon Vasquez wanted the hell out of Atlanta as well. So they had him, and then he went to Cincinnati, and, you know,
But, yeah, all I'm saying is, I mean, if you're going to be a selling club, you better damn hit the nail on the head when you make that signing, and that's what Atlanta has not done. And hopefully that's what we'll do this summer.
Yeah, I mean,
Sorry to bring up old shit. Yeah,
I forgot about that.
I'm gonna go there every time.
It happens across global football. Yeah.
Sorry, Eric.
Mario Cardi. Yeah.
I when I think about it, it's just so fun for me. You know, if you're still listening to the show now, if you're still watching the show now, we really appreciate you.
As we always say, the best stuff comes at the end of the show.
So we're going to sit here. We're going to finish our free beers here, courtesy of Jason Glunt, the owner of Salute. He's a great guy. It's great to see Jason. I do business with Jason. He sells Hot Fly beers here. We did a collab beer, the Undici, the Italian Pilsner, that we did with Salute last
Volare.
Month.
Whoa!
Since we're here, let's just, you know, address the fact that, yes, we can hang on result by result. We've done that on the show.
Yeah.
I'm done.
For 2.5 years, we've been doing that.
Just done. Like, I can't do it that way anymore. Just can't do it that way anymore. A lot of people have been asking, where's the show? Where's Danny and John? Are the boys having beef? At the end of the day, we're transitioning into what the next version of this show will be.
Right.
And I think the conversations that we just had,
right,
is the next version
league-wide, worldwide.
Is to think about the sport here locally, not in a way where I'm sitting here after a loss and losing my mind on the show about Charlotte FC's result on Saturday. It's more so about the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Trying to understand where Charlotte FC fits into the global game.
And the flip side of that is not getting too high after a win, right?
Yep.
Correct.
Which I thought we did a good job of.
Yeah, totally. Like, I made some sobering points that are certainly critical, and I have no problem. I'm not going to let... That's why I did the segment the way I did earlier, right?
Yeah. Where
it's like, I'm not going to let a 3-2 win over Atlanta make me think
one of the worst teams in the league
4 days ago isn't true.
Yeah.
What I thought 4 days ago is that I just didn't like our tactics and I want to play more front-foot football.
And we're one of the worst crossing teams in the league.
So let's just continue to get better. This show is going to continue to get better. Full-time roundup is going to continue to get better. The soccer conversation in Charlotte is going to continue to get better.
Elevate.
Everything is going to continue to get better. And the only way that you get better is when you push things forward.
Yeah.
Right? If you get satisfied, if you get complacent, and you think, oh, we're good the way that we are, then all of a sudden you fall behind.
Right.
I think one of the best tweets we've ever seen that have been mentioned at Charlotte Soccer Show recently, I hate to not give the correct credit on this because I'm not sure who sent it to us, but there was that tweet that had the pictures of the players, this or that, from the original players.
The current players
in those positions.
Yeah.
Would you rather have him or him? And it was so obvious that all the players today you would rather have on the squad.
It was from the opening match with like Franco and Guzman Corujo.
TT
Ortiz. God. Yeah, yeah.
Right? Oh, yeah.
It might have been our boy Sam Spencer. I don't want to miscredit, but it might have been Soccer Sheet. It might have been Nick Finelli. I forget. It was one of those tremendous friends of the show, and we love you all. We just can't remember which one we're talking about at the moment. But yeah, it was great. It was really great. And it was a great thought exercise, you know?
Well, that's my point. You have to push forward.
Right.
And I think
you can't go back.
The club is trying.
Might have been Crowncast. It actually might have been Crowncast. I'm actually pretty sure it was my boy Logan at Crowncast. Sorry, Logan. didn't mean to forget you.
Does anybody else want to get mentioned on the show? Who else? Who else could it have been?
How about shout out to a tremendous friend of the show, Russell Varner, with the insane sick video. Yes. He went for a beer or slash bathroom on, I'm not sure which one, but as he walks back to his seat up in the nosebleeds at MBS, right when Bronner, like, he's got a video going as he walks up the stairs and he turns the, he tilts it over and you see Bronico cut it back to Abada. One of the best Charlotte FC mini viral videos of, that we've ever seen. So good on you, Russell.
Forgive me if I'm wrong about this, but isn't like MBS a way to identify somebody in Saudi?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I hate calling Mercedes.
Mohammed bin Salman. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes. MBS and like, when we call it Mercedes-Benz,
I'm gonna refrain from my commentary on that, but
they called it the Benz. That's what they called it.
The Benz is better.
It's pretty rock star. I'm not gonna lie.
I'm gonna push back on that. I'm gonna push back on that a little bit because I'm on record as how much I dislike calling our stadium the bank. And I have a personal thing against banks, but I don't expect anyone else to buy into that. But what I don't like nicknaming a stadium after the sponsor, because sponsors change. And at Mercedes-Benz, Bank of America, those are two massive blue-chip corporations. They're probably not going to lose naming rights, I get it. But I like the Fortress, you know, and whatever Atlanta wants to call
the
their thing.
The club has adopted the Fortress,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, exactly. And so I just like, let's give names that aren't dependent on the sponsorship dollars as far as nicknames to stadiums. So I'm going to call it... I'm just going to call it Mercedes-Benz Stadium, the formal name.
Speaking of the Fortress, it's got a whole new look in the video. You touched on it earlier. I would like to hear your thoughts.
Segway! This guy is full-time roundup. Segway King, let's go.
I'm learning.
Yeah.
You're getting good.
Let's finish with that.
Yes, I think that's the perfect way to finish the show, is that you saw that it was announced today that Bank of America Stadium is going... the Tepper Sports Entertainment Group plans to renovate Bank of America Stadium. The renovation is proposed to the city of Charlotte that to be completed by 2029. And the proposal involves, if my math serves me correctly, $800 million worth of improvements, enhancements.
It's between six and eight. I know that for a fact.
Well, 650 are coming from us, and like the rest is coming from old Daddy Tep.
So
however much it is.
So $650 million going towards this renovation is expected to be from the 1% tourism tax that City of Charlotte residents pay, and the 1% tourism tax that City of Charlotte residents pay is supposed to go to projects that improve tourism. Things that will make people come to town.
I mean, people are going to come to town one way. I don't think you're going to get people to come to town with an improved Bank of America Stadium. They're going to come to town for what's being played down on the field, not for what the stands look like.
Well, they already do for Panthers games.
Yeah. They opposing teams fill
I'm
the stadium.
I'm a Panthers fan,
Panthers
by
games.
The way, guys. I just want to let you know.
I am not.
But it's true.
Yeah.
I thought about that too. It was a good one. Glad he used it, not me. So
you can say that.
The other $150 million to get to $800 million will be provided by the Tepper Sports and Entertainment Group.
I don't like the ratio. I don't like the ratio. It needs to be 50-50 at least, if you're asking me.
50-50 feels a little easier to swallow.
Yeah. Especially
650 to 150 feels like Tep Daddy.
Right.
Come on, man.
And I'm on record. I love Tep Daddy. I'm not a Tepper out. I'm not like a fuck Tepper type of guy. However, he doesn't have the best track record in Mecklenburg County and York County, South Carolina with construction projects. So he's already burned a couple different locations. Let's just be honest about that. Do we really trust with $650 million worth of our tourism tax that these improvements at BOA are going to be worth it? Because the mock-ups I saw looked slick, but they didn't really make me feel like, oh, this is going to be so much better. Like, it seemed a little bit like window dressing and maybe, you know, redoing a section in the upper deck so you can charge more for tickets up there. But you're still in the upper deck.
I think there'd be only one way that I'd be comfortable with the 650 to 150 split. and I would buy into the fact that it would actually improve tourism. If it had a retractable dome on it. Because if you put a retractable dome on it, you're actually talking about things like college football playoff.
Yeah.
College football national championship.
Right.
Super Bowl.
Right.
You're talking about some of the biggest events in the world.
Right.
Coming to Charlotte and being played here. If there's a dome, it just doesn't seem to me like...
I would hope that the ultimate goal is to get a Super Bowl with this renovation, whether it's a dome or not. Whether that's realistic or not, I would think that that would have to at least be in the planning.
It's tough, though, because when you think about Super Bowls, you know, MetLife Stadium had a Super Bowl.
And it was horrible.
And that's nobody else north of where? Florida has had a Super Bowl.
Yes,
it's
the Phoenix, Miami, New Orleans rotation for sure. Yeah, and Atlanta
has a dome. They'll get a Super Bowl.
But they would have it like Atlanta doesn't need the dome because their climate. January in Charlotte is beautiful. February in Charlotte is great. You know, I got no issues. But
it's tough to really commit.
Depends on the day. Yeah,
it's tough to commit to that. So if he was proposing that they were going to put a retractable dome on the stadium, I'd say, you know what? Make it 800 mil tax money.
Right.
Because you actually will bring a shit ton of people into town.
The thing that's crazy, I saw a tweet, can't credit anyone, but I saw something like Tepper has brought, when he bought it, it was 13 events per year.
Yes.
Now it's like 42 that's or something correct. Like that.
Yeah, that was the entire point of, that's why Charlotte FC exists.
And the concerts. Well, yeah, no shit, right? But
that is how the club was conceived.
But
Tepper was like, I'm not buying the Panthers, I'm buying Bank of America Stadium, and I'm going to freaking maximize
it. But
this,
what I'm saying with
sure.
that percent of increase, you'd think he would share a little bit more
the
within
love.
The percentage,
Tep.
A little bit. But
or adopt me. Just adopt me, Tep, and we're fine, you know. Then I won't say any of this.
I just hope it looks nicer outside.
And you hate talking about other people's money. You really do, and how they should spend it. But at the end of the day,
it's not. But we're talking about our money.
When someone starts talking about our money,
yeah.
And starts talking about getting, you know, we start getting taxed to create this. Then all of a sudden, you say to yourself, "Well, how much money is David Tepper worth?" And a quick Google search will tell you he's worth about almost $40 billion.
Right.
And he's going to put up $150 million.
Right.
We're going to put up $650 million.
Right. So that's what? That's an extra $250 million if we went for the 50-50 split. If he went up to $400-ish. $250 million on a multi-billion-dollar fortune. I don't know. I mean, I almost want to reach over and take your hat off, Johnny, but I'm not going to do that.
That was a good one.
I mean, we love him. He's the godfather of Charlotte FC.
Love the guy.
And
love the guy.
You know, we
love you, Tep. Adopt me.
Maybe someone your age has been adopted before. I don't know. That's a good question.
For inheritance purposes, I'm sure it's happened. And that's what I'd be looking for.
Did you see that Murdoch, 93-year-old Murdoch?
Rupert Murdoch?
Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah.
The Fox News guy, the guy that owns Fox, married for the fifth time. He's 93 years old and he's just married for the fifth time.
Sometimes it takes you a while to find love, you know? 73-year-old owner of the Las Vegas Raiders his wife has a bun in the oven. So, you know, there you go.
So we'll see what happens with the stadium deal. I think it was super interesting, and I've already seen some pushback about the $650 million.
It's a big number.
Being asked to be paid by Charlotte citizens. And
just think of what we could spend $650 million on in Charlotte. The Silver Line to run a... mass transit rail down to Matthews and maybe even up to like improve the improvements on the Gold Line, the Red Line North, like just like
get something out to the airport.
Right, you could spend which is a mess right now. You try to go to the airport and if it's the wrong day, you better like you feel bad if you take an Uber out there because you're like I'm costing this Uber driver like their entire day, like it's horrible. Like and like. You could probably spend $150 million on mass transit in Charlotte and turn this into a much more livable city. So, it's tough to imagine. And when I looked at the mock-ups, I had some people that are not Charlotte residents send me pictures and like, oh, man, like people on like, oh, Danny Brams, this looks sick. This looks sick. This looks sick. These mock-ups look sick. And I'm like, they look like window dressing to me. It looks like just taking what you got to make it a little nicer. There's no dome, like you said, Johnny. So it's a tough pill to swallow, the $650 million.
I've said on the show before that I've seen a great transformation of an old stadium and it's in Miami. And what they did with the Hard Rock Stadium was that in the upper deck, they cut out the corners.
Sure.
Did you notice on the new rendering what they did upstairs? They cut out the corners. The capacity will be reduced in this renovation.
And the ticket prices will go up.
Correct.
I would say, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Danny Brack,
no,
but
gonna,
like,
I was just sighing.
It looked to
sadness.
Me, it looked to me like it was a new club level in the upper deck.
That's
and
correct.
Johnny, you know about the fool's gold of the club level.
Yes, yes. The club level is the new hot commodity in professional sports because they can charge you so much money for not much more.
Right.
AC walking in the tunnels, is that about it?
Yep.
That's what I've noticed.
Yeah. Give me a break. Who cares about AC in the tunnels?
So that's a story to follow. We're definitely going to be following that on Charlotte Soccer Show. It's been a pleasure to be here at Salud. Thank you, Jason, for the free beer as we're doing the show.
How about a supporter section where we can stand, like make it – we don't need a soccer-specific stadium, but a soccer-specific style supporter section, Mint Street End, would be amazing where you stand with those railings. That would be awesome.
You've always had a great idea. Your idea about having the Panthers being the first team in NFL history to have a supporter section.
Right. They need it.
A standing room only little section would be cool too. Like just the railings. I think that would be cool.
Yeah.
And maybe some local restaurants in the concessions instead of just generic Cisco.
Bojangles, come on now.
It's big business.
How about some Noble Smoke?
It's big business. It's tough to get into that stadium. You know?
This guy knows.
Can't even have a you can't do a watch party you can't do an official Charlotte FC watch party unless you serve Modelo.
Well, I like Modelo.
I do too. I'm not complaining about that. I'm just saying, like, we can't host one here. There's not ever going to be a Charlotte FC official watch party here at Salute. There's never going to be an official Charlotte FC watch party at Hot Fly. There's never going to be one at Noda because you have to serve.
EPR?
You have to serve.
EPR does serve Modelo, actually.
You guys used to buy my Modelos.
There we go.
Way back in the day.
EPR can do it.
Usually on special.
Yeah.
Shout out to Elizabeth Parlor Room, Matt Miranda, the bearded bartender.
Love you, Matt.
Friends of the show.
Best old fashioned in town.
I think it's time for us to get out of here, though.
We've been having a good time, yeah.
Really enjoyed it on the show. It's, again, let's just say, it's a derby win. The team is halfway through the season. Things are looking up. Charlotte FC is in playoff positioning. And on the way out of here, I'll just ask you one thing. What's the ceiling for this club this season?
You go first.
Top four is attainable. Not predictable, but attainable.
I think top six is realistic.
Top six is definitely realistic. I feel that way, too. I think that hosting a home three-game series in the playoffs, to me, which would be finishing in the top four, right?
Yeah.
That, to me, I agree with you, Danny. Like that, to me, I don't care if you're fourth. I don't care if you're third. Supporters' Shield's not happening at this point.
No.
MLS Cup, I don't know. Talk to me in a couple months about that.
Just get in the playoffs and see what happens. I think New York is going to cool off. There's no way New York can keep up this pace. I think Miami, I'll go broke predicting against Miami, but I really do think Miami is a bit of a sinking ship. We talked about the conspiracy of them having to get extra games, so they're always in first place.
The
loss to Atlanta
that.
Exposed some cracks for Miami.
It's actually a really good take.
So, of course it is.
Yeah.
I think Columbus is a danger because they're below us, but Columbus has like four games in hand on Miami and three on us. And so Columbus is going to shoot up the ranks. But I think if you look at Miami, New York, Cincy, Columbus, and Charlotte, why can't we finish ahead of one of those teams?
It's a beautiful thing. And Dean Smith's at the wheel. There's no doubt that Dino's at the wheel. And whether you like his tactics or not, he's accumulating points. 25 points halfway through the season, halfway to the goal of 50 that we stated preseason we needed to get 50. So I'm John Hayes. I'm with the two Dannys, Danny Brams, of course. And Danny Brackets, always a pleasure to have you, Brackets, on the show.
Yes, sir.
Listen to Full-Time Roundup podcast covering global football.
This is our young DP right here.
In Germany, I'm
I am. So I'm looking forward to that. Amsterdam.
You going to different Euros matches?
Hopefully Spain versus Croatia.
Woo!
Pretty good one.
So that's the goal. So we'll see if we can find some not make bankrupt me tickets, and we'll see what happens.
Just jump over the turnstiles, man. Just
go for
just
it.
Say, I'm an American. Let me in.
I'm sure they love that
over there in Germany. Trust me.
Thanks for having me on, fellas.
Yeah, cheers. Always great to see you. Great to have you on. Safe travels.
Thank you.
Enjoy the trip. And you're going to get a ton of Copa content on Full Time Roundup. You're going to get a ton of Euros content on Full Time Roundup. And the transfer season is here. It's the summer transfer window is ready to go. Fabrizio, every morning, you know, considering he's on European time, he's the first tweets that I see every single morning. He's cooking early.
He's Carousel, too. It's going to be a wild summer.
He's tweeting whatever he's been paid to tweet, old Fabrizio, for sure.
Thanks so much to our tremendous friends at the show. We love you. Thanks so much for hanging out on this latest episode of Charlotte Soccer Show.
And Johnny, as always.
It's for the crown, baby.
Let's go.